members, at this time we'll begin your hearing, and the Honorable Mr. David Neal is going to lead your hearing. He will be the person who will be leading. I see you keep leading. Can you hear me okay, sir?
I'm pushing his button, so I can...
Can you hear me while we're waiting for Mr. Neal? Can you hear us okay, sir?
Yes, yes.
Okay, well, the Honorable Mr. David Neal will conduct your hearing. So just hang on, sir.
Okay, sir. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. First, we have several people here on your behalf. I just want to... Are you or are all of you wish to speak this morning? Okay, you support me? Okay. You see the way the hearing proceeds, so when about the time comes, you'll be allowed to come up.
There was a third hand went up.
Huh?
I said there was a third hand went up also.
Oh, okay. I looked away. Look down. All right. Well, I'll ask you to, if there's anybody else, you know. So, I mean, and so if the two of you do it, then the other two decide they want to do it. Okay. No problem there. Okay, good morning, sir. You're coming for the order of order. We thank the clemency this morning and invited to vote her. Would you state your full name and ADC number for the record, please?
David Rodriguez,
102936. Thank you, sir. Okay, we're going to, I'm going to go over some information here, and I'm going to throw it to our maybe discuss some of the bill just to make sure that it's accurate. If I say something that you think it's inaccurate, please let me know, and I will make the correction or we'll discuss, okay?
Okay.
All right, so you're currently 51 years old, sir?
Yes. Okay.
Okay. And you're serving a life sentence for first degree murder and a consecutive 18-year sentence for first-degree burglary. These sentences started on April 28th of 1994, although the offense occurred August 24th of 1988. You became parole eligible on April 28th, 2018, when you will become parole eligible. And you were certified for this hearing for parole to the next consecutive sentence or after discharge on April 24, 2019. This is your second time for parole. So I'm going to go over the offense at this point in time. And again, if there's something I say that you feel is incorrect, please. Pardon me?
One of the dates you just gave, it was, I don't know, something 1993. I think you said 94.
Well, I'm going to have information that is in the packet, so that's also if it, I believe that there were several times that you were sentenced to retry and resentenced and things changed over a period of time. I will also make note that we have a letter from the Peter County Attorney's Office dated March 27, 2019, which is in opposition to any type of release or parole to consecutive sentence. Okay, so I'm going to, as far as summarizing the sentence, and then I will be using information from the pre-sentence report. From, I believe this one. Let's see, because I'm sure there were several pre-sentence reports. I believe this was a pre-sentence report of a woman when it was written after last sentencing. But I'm going to get information from that and the Pima County attorneys. Letter. But basically, August 26 of 1988, in the early afternoon hours, police officers went to the apartment complex in the 1100 block of Irvington Road in Tucson, Arizona. where he discovered the victim, 38-year-old female, who lived alone in the apartment. She was deceased, and had been deceased for 31 and 2 days. She had a nightgown, pulled up around her body, and she got a lot of room. Her underwear was found under the body. The apartment's in disarray, as though it had been ransacked or a struggle had taken place. And a considerable amount of blood was located in several areas, and bloody fingerprints were found. 4 knives were missing from a knife blocked in the kitchen. Bloodstained knives were found around the apartment, all were accounted for. 1 broken knife blade was found on the floor near the victim. A hair curling iron, which was plugged in to an electrical outlet and switched on, was protruding through the victim's vagina. Police observation and subsequent autopsy documented 49 wounds or loops on the victim. 1 force injury accounted for a smashed nose, torn lips, fractured bones, a torn liver, and various bruises and abrasions to bodily extremities, torso, neck, and head. Her neck had sustained 13 incised and 13 stab wounds. Some were probably inflicted post-mortem. Some of the knife wounds were superficial. 2 were deep penetrating stab wounds through the frontal aspect of the neck, 1 wound penetrated to the bone at the rear of her neck. And the medical opinion indicated the victim survived for 15 to 30 minutes after the infliction of these fatal wounds. During the autopsy, a handle from a broken knife was found inside the victim's vagina with the curling iron. Cuts, bruises, and abrasions located on the forearms, hands, and feet were identified as wounds sustained by the victim while defending herself. At that time, they did not have a suspect and were unable to pursue it, but 4 years later, there was an anonymous phone call. The caller was named you as the perpetrator. And from information supplied, detectives located you in police records. The written contract listed from the bloodstained knife that was found next to the body, and that was identified as being identical to the palm print of you. And at one time, apparently, you lived in an apartment complex where the crime took place, but you lived in a different but separate apartment complex at the time of the murder. You were confirmed by police on April 28, 1993, and stated you had no explanation for your palm print on the knife blade. You denied knowing the victim or having ever been to her apartment. You were arrested and went on to trial. Now, according to the other information we have, so you were previously been sentenced to death on the first trial, but it was reversed because errors. On the trial, you were again convicted and again sentenced to death, and again the Supreme Court reversed the conviction due to jury instructions that were in error. A fair trial resulted in a hung jury, and a fair trial ruling with the convictions for which you were in prison today. And because the fair trial occurred just before the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that juries, not judges, had to decide the issue of the death sentence, the county attorney's office withdrew its request for a death sentence, and the judge imposed the life and consecutive 18-year sentence. So that's fairly accurate to that point, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now we will move on from that part. Into some other information. information. So your criminal history will date back to about 1986. Were numerous assaults, DUI, resisting arrest, obstruction of judicial proceedings, which was probably some type of a court order that you violated. Now, since you've been in, you've done remarkably well and only have two disciplinary actions. Had a stalking in 2009 and possession of drugs on 1/16/2015, which was informal. So what was the stalking about, sir?
The stalking had to do with, I was over at therapy and we're having a group session, and the therapist asked me to talk about an issue I was going through, and I advised her that I wasn't ready to go through it, and she was like, "You don't have to, that's what the group is for." And I was like, "No, I don't have to." And then she got like really serious and ended up kind of made me do it, and I was just like, I felt like, no, I didn't have to do it. Not at that time, I didn't have to do it. And I thought it was just no big deal, but apparently I had gotten upset over it because she kept on telling me I had to do it. And I came back and apologized afterwards, but she said, no, it's too late. And I had gotten a write-up after that. And I was taken out of the group, and then when I found out what it was for, they said it was for stalking, which I didn't understand why it was stalking, because I mean, it had nothing to do with anything stalking related, but that's what they think it was for.
Okay. So, and what about the drugs?
The drug was it was ibuprofen that the medical had issued me for my feet, my pain in my feet. And some guy, a friend of mine, he had some pain, so he felt that it was easy to just go to my cell and take them, because he needed some. And they ended up, I guess it, my name was on it. Then they're calling me in, why didn't I secure my meds? And I was just like, I didn't think about that because I had left them in, I thought in my cell in a secure area, but I didn't put them in my locker. And that's why I got a verbal reprimand for that.
Okay. Alright. So this is quite a heinous crime and everything. I think now would be good time for you to kind of tell us or give us some information, you know, from your perspective. But tell us kind of what was going on back then, why you would do something this terrible, and once we get past that, then it'll be time for you to kind of explain to us what you've done to rehabilitate yourself since you've been incarcerated that would make you a good candidate for this time it's a next conception, but why you would be a good candidate for that, why you would better yourself, and how you would better yourself, okay? So first, why, you know, what was going on that would cause you to do something like that?
Well, at the time I was drinking a lot, I was doing drugs, and my wife was like 9 months pregnant, and I guess I was really stressed out at the time, and when I met the victim, I mean, it was nothing like, I never intended to do anything. My intentions were or just to go over there and just have a good time. So that's how it all started. Like, I was invited to go party with her. And one night I told her, I'll go over tonight if I can. I go, if I don't go to work, I'll go over. And so that night, I did end up going over. And I was still drinking and doing cocaine. And I went over and took some beer, and she invited me in. And when she invited me in, she was already naked. And I was just like, wow. And she started trying to kiss me and stuff. And I was just like, at first, I was attracted to her. And we ended up on her bed. And because she was like really, really, really drunk, she ended up like gagging, like she was about to throw up. And I kind of like grossed me out, so I kind of got up. And so I was turned off by that, and I told her I was going to leave. And she was telling me, no, stay. And I'm like, no. I go, I really don't feel like it anymore. And when I went to leave, she grabbed my arm and she slapped me. And when she slapped me, there was just this rage that came out of me, and the attack came on. And I just ended up starting to punch her, and there were some knives right there. I ended up grabbing some knives on her counter and started stabbing her. I wasn't thinking about anything. I was like just wanting to get out. But once the attack was on, I don't recall everything that was happening. I mean, I now, just because I see the evidence and I know I did it, I kind of try to put everything together. And so once I stabbed her and I thought she was dead already. For some reason, I guess one of the knives that broke, I took one of the handles and inserted it into her. It must have been the rage I felt for her. And then I got the curling iron and also inserted it into her. And I was trying to leave at that time. And I went to the door and I couldn't leave because there was somebody outside. So I was just like going crazy in there because I didn't want to get caught. I was just like ransacking the place and kind of yelling at her, like, see what you made me do. And finally it was clear outside and I left. That's all that happened that night.
So, were you just drinking alcohol?
Yes, beer and doing cocaine this was, when I did that, it was like a couple of days in a row. It wasn't like just that day. Because I would stay up and drink and do cocaine.
So, was that a time, I mean, were you saying that you were blacked out during the incident, what I'm trying to get into, were you subject to blackouts from your drugs and drunkenness, or periods of when you actually don't remember what you were doing? Or was that the only time something like that happened?
No, I've blacked out before. from Jake. But from, I remember like the attack, like when it started, I remember the rage. But like during the attack, like I don't remember anything. I knew I had done something wrong. I knew once it was over, I knew what I had done. And when I went home, I knew what I had done. I just didn't know exactly like the details. Like even when I seen it on the news and I read the paper, I was just like, oh my God, what, you know, like what did I do, you know? And when my attorney came to me with the actual evidence, like I was just like, I was surprised as to like the broken knife handle. Like I hadn't even remembered that. Like I remembered the curling iron, I guess, because I seen it in the paper. And that was like kind of was.
But so you're saying that you were so affected by the drug and alcohol and you could do that stuff to that woman, but you had enough presence of mind to realize it was somebody outside when you went to leave, so you had to stay there so they could know you were there. That's kind of unusual, but you know, the reason they didn't identify you right away is because nobody's palm prints weren't integrated into the APHIS system, so they have to wait until they get a suspect and before they can do it and act it up, and that's what happened. You kept that to yourself for 4 years. You didn't have enough nerves to turn yourself in. Yeah, and with the 4 year period, you denied doing it.
Yes, I guess I did tell other people. It's just that I didn't want to turn myself in because I was just, you know, I don't know
what good it would have done. Well, you said one of the reasons you went to this woman's place and you were going to go drinking and stuff is because you were under so much stress that you know, were having trouble coping. But then you get out that terrible, heinous murder, and I can't believe that wouldn't cause a person to be stressed keeping it a secret. So how many times after that did the stress drive you to drink, and did you kill anybody else after that? Or, you know, I just can't quite understand how, if you're so stressed out, you got to go drinking, and when you drink and do cocaine for 2 days, you commit that type of crime and say you don't remember what happened, but you had enough presence of mind to realize there was somebody outside the apartment, so you couldn't leave because you didn't want to be identified. And then you kept that secret for 4 years.
Well, I don't think it was the stress and worry. I think it was a different things going on all that. And you know what I did was I didn't do anything else afterwards.
Okay. Well, let's move on a little bit with that. So, can we get that now? Why don't you tell the board what you've done since you've been incarcerated that has made you a better, you know, better person, somebody that deserves a, you know, the ability in the next consecutive sentence will make it, you know, a lot more likely that you might be released someday. And so, explain to the world what you've done since you've been incarcerated and what makes you a good candidate for that.
Well, I've taken numerous classes that help with that, like SOEDP, domestic violence classes, conflict resolutions, brief interventions, life skills, transforming anger. I've taken numerous classes to help me with certain issues.
So, I mean, you took a lot of classes, but so how did that make you become a candidate for eventually being returned to society. I mean, people take classes all the time, and they end up going out and are totally unsuccessful, and they hurt people and everything else. They, you know, get college degrees and still do that. So what, you know, you took the classes, so why are you a better person now? What did they do to make you a better person? You know, can you explain that a little bit better?
Well, I think my thinking has definitely changed as far as how I react to certain situations. I give it more thought. I'm aware of how things are affecting me. Whereas before, I gave it no thought. I just reacted to certain situations and ended up making bad choices all the time. Now that I've learned different strategies to help me deal with certain issues, then I'm aware more of what's going on with me, like whatever situation, how it's affecting me. And when it affects me, at least I can do something about it. I can stop it and make a better choice instead of just reacting to whatever's going on.
Well, I will say that you have a remarkably good disciplinary record since you've been incarcerated, which is, that's very commendable. With any classes you've taken, it's, you know, it's very commendable that you've been learning and taking classes, going to school, hopefully learning something from it. I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions at this time. Mr. Knowles.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
We've gone through the crime itself, but I'm confused about something, and that is, what caused such a strong response to a quarrel, and why so much rage? It doesn't quite add up for me. Not that there's a good reason to murder somebody, but it doesn't add up for me as to what led to such a violent response to a quarrel. You know, people get in arguments, and sometimes it even gets a bit physical, but it doesn't escalate to such a high level of violence. And we also understand on the science side of things that just because someone is under the influence of alcohol or drugs doesn't necessarily mean that they have the capacity to murder somebody. You know, there's often an underlying reason or psychology. So again, I'm not a counselor, and I'm not a research scientist, but how do you account for so much rage in that incident, sir?
I wish I could answer that. It's just my thing, and I believe it was everything built up to take it out on her, I guess. I couldn't answer it. Honestly,
that's
just what I think.
And why was your feeling that she made you do this to her?
When I said, like, look what you made me do.
Yes.
Because I guess at that time, I thought it was her fault, you know, for making me do that. Now, of course, it wasn't her fault. It was all my fault. But at that time, that's just how I felt. Like, I was so angry that I felt like it was her fault for slapping me. But it was definitely not her fault.
Mr. Rodriguez, you weren't around the last hearing. I made reference to this at a different hearing, but as one board member, I try to look at everything. It's not good enough for me just to simply think that someone behaved well inside prison, there was no discipline, therefore they're okay. Oftentimes there's issues that we can't see, there's issues going on inside the individual, there's different types of personalities. Sometimes it's just the circumstances in and of itself of being removed from opportunities or threats. Everyone's unique. Everyone's experience is unique. But why do you think this board should return you to the community if you would get in an argument with someone and your response to that would be to mutilate them?
Oh, no. How I responded to situations back then and how I respond to situations now is totally different. And I just feel if ever there was someone that you would consider for this for release, I believe I'd be more perfect candidate, but that's just because of the changes I've gone through. Now, as far as the crime is concerned, I understand the severity of it, but that's not going to change. That's always going to remain the same.
Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez. No further questions. Thank you, Mr.
Mr. Johnson.
So, Mr. Rodriguez, according to your parole plan, you start out by saying that you admit to the terrible mistake of committing this crime, and this is the first time in your life that you have admitted to committing this crime. What brought about that change, sir?
What brought about the change, you said?
Right. In your parole plan, it starts out saying, I fully admit that I made a terrible mistake in committing the crime which led to my incarceration. For the first time in my life, I realistically faced my past mistake and accept absolute responsibility for that. That's the start of your parole plan. So what brought about that change, sir?
I just remember once I got locked up and started thinking about what I'd done and what I'd done, not just this crime, but what I'd done in previous relationships and in my past, I thought there was something wrong with me that I needed to find out why I was doing what I was doing, and I wanted to get help.
That's it. Okay, thank you. Mr. Will?
Yeah.
McQueen. Mr. Rodriguez, I forgot to ask you a follow-up question, which is why I got quiet for a second, and then it hit me after my colleague started speaking. Should you be released to the community, it looks like that your future plan is to live in Mexico, and
yes.
How do you propose to do that, being as that you will have, if you're returned to the community, that you would have a period of home arrest and parole? How would you propose that you return to Mexico?
Well, my understanding, because I'm a Mexican national, I already signed the deportation papers, so once I would be released, INS would take a hold of me and deport me. That's my understanding of it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Miller.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Rodriguez, how many courses have you taken at this
SOPT, you know, this sexual offense course. Have you had just one course or several courses, sir?
Several. See, steps to sexual behavior, that was one, 12 steps. And then it was a SOETP, the actual SOETP class. I took the maintenance program afterwards. Also forgot the orientation one, too, the six-session orientation.
Okay, then let me ask this, then. I commend you for taking all those courses. But one of the things that is my understanding that when you take those courses, you learn what the triggers were that resulted in your behavior. So what were the triggers? You know, I heard what you said to my distinguished colleagues, but what were the real triggers that led you to such behavior and sexual behavior? The murder, yes, but the sexual behavior. What was going on, sir? What were your triggers?
I believe it was rejection, the loneliness. I believe those were the
who had rejected you, sir, in the past?
I would say my wife, because as she was 9 months pregnant, she was about just to give birth, and if, like, I would want to have sex, and she said no, 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 I guess that contributed to it.
Now that you had time to reflect on it, do you think that you were thinking in a logical way that, with that, sir?
Excuse me, I didn't hear you.
Do you think that was logical thinking now that you had these many years to think about it? Do you think that that made any sense at all, that you thought that she was neglecting you because she refused to have sexual intercourse with you? So now, do you feel that was a mistake on your part, sir?
Well, I definitely feel it was a mistake. It was a horrible choice to seek it somewhere else instead of, you know, working out the issues with my wife.
I think we asked you this the last time, and I apologize to those in the room for asking this particular question, but I just, you know, I mean, there are a number of things that we hear all the time sitting up here, but certainly somewhat unique. Now, what possessed you to take that knife and put it into her vagina, sir? I apologize for that language, but that's what, if I read it correct, that's what happened. So why did you do that, sir? I mean, murder is one thing, but why did you do something like that, sir?
Well, it wasn't a knife, it was the handle of the knife.
Okay, the handle then of the knife. Okay, I'll tell you that. So what possessed you to do that, sir?
Like I said before, I have no answer to that, only because I don't remember that part of it. I don't remember that part because I've seen the evidence, and that I know that I was the one that did this, that was responsible for this.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you, Honorable Mr. Corn. I'm sorry, Honorable Mr. Neal. Thank you, Honorable Mr. Neal, sir.
That leads me to another question. Why would you stick or push a plugged-in, turned-on curling iron into that woman's vagina? What would possess you to do something like that?
Well, I guess my only answer to that would be the rage I had, the hate I had for her, that I wanted to inflict as much pain, I guess.
Well, why would you have hate for somebody you didn't hardly know? What wouldn't she do to have that hate?
She did nothing to deserve that. I would make that clear. It's just that's just the way I guess, you know, thinking back, like, what possessed me, it would be hate. I mean,
Okay. Well, sir, at this time, I will ask you to leave your question to the board, leave your question from the board. Okay, at this time, I'm going to allow your supporters to come up and speak at the time. And then we have a victim advocate who wants to speak, and then we'll be back to you, okay?
Okay.
I guess you want to be first.
Good morning.
Then state your name, and then tell us what you'd like to say.
My name is Amanda Gallegos. I am the sister of Toribio Rodriguez. And I just wanted to say that, first of all, I'm sorry for his actions, what he had did. We weren't raised to be, we weren't raised that way. I grew up, I'm a year, let me say, a year and a half younger than my brother. I grew up with my brothers. Mind you, I have two sisters that are older than me and two sisters younger than me. They're 5 years apart where the females are. Now, my brothers, they're 1 or 2 years older or younger than me, so I'm the middle child, and I grew up with my brothers. So I grew up playing ball with my brothers. I grew up playing with them all the time. This person, I'm hearing, you know, what's going on, and I heard it before. I could not ever imagine him ever doing that. He was always my protector. The person that always protected me. Growing up. I just can't explain what I did. I don't know what it had to do with. Maybe it's drinking. Maybe I don't do the drugs. I don't know. He wasn't that kind. He was never that kind of a person. He was always very kind, very helpful. I've never known. So now when I hear him talk, I just can't believe the horrific crime that he committed. And on behalf of my family, I do want to apologize, because that's not what he was raised. He was never raised that way. None of us were. We're a big family. We're a family of eight. I have a brother who did pass away when he was 29. My mother, of course, has dementia already. And we support him. I write to him anytime I have, as to trying to provide for him, and if he was to be released or, you know, to get counseling. We do have a family in Mexico that's willing, an extended family of ours. We do have a lot of family members there. So to seek, and we would like to be able to get him help, because he does need help. He needs to be able to cope in society. He needs to be able to deal with everything that he's gone through. And does anybody have any questions for me?
Hi, my name is Bianca Rodriguez. So Toribio Rodriguez is my uncle. Very sorry for his actions. It's hard to hear this. This isn't the first time, but he's not that person. He's been a role model for me. When we do visitations over the phone, he counsels me, he guides me, he most of all tries to point me in the right direction. He has a lot of family support, whether it's here in Mexico. You know, he does get gun parole or release, whatever it may be. He has all the resources in order to be successful outside of life in prison. And overall, he's not that person. I understand for the crime that he has committed. He has taken a lot of programs, completed his GED, the anger management program, completed all programs in order so that he can better himself and become a better individual. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to speak then? No. Anyone else would like to speak on behalf of Mr. Rodriguez? Okay. So this time I'm going to allow the victim's advocate to come up and present.
Good morning, board members. My name is Alejandro Palacios, victim advocate with the Office of Victim Services at the Arizona Department of Corrections. I'm going to read a statement that was provided to me by the mother of the deceased victim. Dear Board of Executive Clemency, my name is Helen Hall, and I'm the victim's mother. I'm 93 years old. Our concern is that he never gets out. I would hate to think that he could do this to somebody else. Our entire family does not feel that those kinds of crimes are ever rehabilitated. That is why we do not want him ever out.
Thank you, sir. Okay, Mr. Rodriguez, now that we've heard from your supporters and the victim's letter, we are nearing the end of your hearing. So before the board goes into discussion to make a determination, we'd like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. So if there's anything else you'd like to tell the board, now would be the time.
I would like to thank my family for supporting me and being there for me. And I just pray you all, you know, give it just give me a chance. I will not let you down. And that's all I can say. I mean,
okay, well, thank you, sir. The board will be going into a discussion to make a determination. We'll be talking amongst ourselves. We ask that you remain silent, but stay on the phone. You can hear the entire conversation. Once we make a determination, I'll get back with you, okay?
Okay.
All right, the board is now in discussion. Now, this is a very tragic case. Very complex in case. There's quite a few things that I noticed. Now, Mr. Rodriguez, he seems to be accepting the fact that he committed the crime, but I just don't get the feeling that he's fully grasping it. He's really taking responsibility for what he did, and I don't even know that he really truly understands the gravity of what went on. But the idea that he had that much rage and built up any of that, some raising cocaine. And an argument with somebody caused him to react like that. It is a reason to me that if he was released, that he would have, he would have access to alcohol, he would have access to drugs, and that there is a potential for a repeat of the same sort of thing. And I think my concern about that comes from, I don't think he's got a really totally good handle on the reality of it. And he was sentenced to death twice, and the convictions weren't turned over because of the death sentence. They were turned over because of errors and instructions, those kind of things. And he was proceeding before, where there's a death penalty and the appeals court vacates the death penalty and sends it back to resentencing, but they haven't turned over the trial. This is basically just the opposite. There was a home board in the third time, and the fourth time the county attorney didn't ask for the death penalty. Well, I think it's proven in court, or decided in court, that it is the criminal gravity involved with this, then I think Mr. Rodriguez is accepting. But I'm not satisfied that he's got control of his psyche, so to speak, so that if he was given an opportunity to do some drinking and do some drugs, that he might recommit this type of crime. And without those, he still might, because of the stress of being back out in public, you know, the community and everything, might push him into some violence. So at this time, I am not in favor of the next consecutive sentence, and absolutely not in favor of an absolute discharge. But hopefully we'll have a good discussion about this. My fellow board members?
I think you summed it up well.
I do too, and I think I just want to add that he just had a past criminal history of
I didn't hear.
I agree. I just wanted to add that the past criminal history of domestic violence and assault on the is that shot from female.
Well, violent past. So, in that case, at this time, I'm going to make a motion and reference to Toribio Rodriguez, AUC 102936. I'm going to make a motion to deny for the next consecutive sentence or ask to discharge at this time, and I'm going to ask for a limited set off. That would be my motion.
Agreed.
Who seconded it?
Second.
Okay.
Thank
you. Motion by myself, second by Mr. Johnson. I believe I have to write to Mr. Canales the type of release that was denied. Only 12 B for 11. And the reasons, it's a series of minor offense, loss of human life, serious and demeaning offense, trauma to the victim. There's serious bodily injury before the fatal words. It sounds like it would be victim harassment in the because she didn't look for him. History of assaulting behavior. Continue to file criminal history. History and actually trying to support him in the release plan. So unless my fellow board members would like to add anything to that. Okay, Mr. Rodriguez, the board has voted to deny a parole without consecutive sentence or absolute discharge at this time. Did you hear the reasons?
Yes.
Okay. We do recommend you continue on the path you're going, continue programming and good behavior. You will be certified again in approximately a year by the Department of Corrections coming from the board again. In the meantime, we do wish you the best of luck. And this will end your hearing, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Would you just lay the phone down and either have the CO3 pick it up or the next inmate, please?
Okay.